Hi everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just saying a huge thank you to all of you that have supported my charity appeal so far. For those that haven't heard about it, this September I'm going to be swimming 15 kilometres between five islands in Cornwall. I'll be swimming the Isles of Scilly, that's Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. I'm doing it because I want to, but also to raise money for CALM, the campaign against living miserably. It's a well-known statistic that 125 people in the UK die by suicide every week, and CALM run a free and confidential helpline for people to speak through their problems and ultimately to help prevent suicides. I'm looking to raise enough money to train two new phone workers to man those lines, and I'll be doing it by swimming the Isles of Scilly in Cornwall. If you're looking to support me, it would be greatly appreciated. You can donate at justgiving.com. Just go there and search for Adam Swim Scilly. That's Adam Swim Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. All donations greatly appreciated. Thank you for helping me to support CALM. And now, on with Monkey Tennis.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I am hopping mad and I want something in the middle.
Absolutely. Yep, absolutely.
Monkey tennis? Bring, bring. There's a new chat in town.
I had the last laugh.
Dad!
Monkey tennis?
Little pierce my foot on the spine.
With a chuckle. Monkey tennis?
Radical. Awesome. Mega.
Monkey tennis?
Okay.
Where's my assistant? I do not know.
Monkey tennis?
Edmunds is a total wazzock of a guy.
Yes, and yes.
It's hotter than the sun.
I said, who the hell is that?
This is great banter.
Yeah.
Monkey tennis?
Back of the net.
The people who enjoy Alan Partridge will enjoy this podcast. The people who've never got it still won't get it.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast, where we're rattling our way through Alan's own podcast from the Oast House, Series 3. I'm Adam Brooks, and I'm joined by Tom Dark.
Where are you, you daft Geordie bugger?
Nick Older.
We'll get along famously. You're not in a union, are you?
And Tom Stab.
So, Tony, for what? Digging up a bog and finding half a Viking sink?
Yes, the pace is heating up as we get towards the end of this series and the hunt for Michael intensifies. Today, we're going to be talking about two episodes of From the Oast House, Episode 9, Newcastle. And episode 10, Dreams. But before we get to all of that, we'd like to start each episode with a quick look at the Partridge promo trail. That is, things that Alan, or in real life, Steve and the team, have been doing to promote this series. So over to Tom Dark for today's tits bit.
Yeah, this one is perhaps a bit of a less known piece of a Partridge promo paraphernalia. Perhaps a bit of an Easter egg for other podcast listeners. So yeah, so Alan appeared as a cameo in essentially a From the Oast House advert at the top of the Adam Buxton podcast. I believe it was the episode with Tash Dimitri back in September 2023. So you should be able to find it at the top of the episode there. But obviously the way Adam Buxton does his adverts, he doesn't have the kind of generic inserted adverts that lesser podcasts like us have. He does them all as a kind of bespoke record. So yeah, you've got this brilliant kind of Alan in character meeting Adam Buxton in his local field out walking the dogs. So I think it's worth... We should play a bit of it in, but I think the whole thing is about 3 minutes long. So it's definitely a bit of bonus Partridge that's worth seeking out. But let's play a bit in now just so you guys can get a sense of it all. And I'm actually not sure... I don't think everybody on the team has actually heard this yet, have they? So
I
bit of a
not.
Learning experience for all of us. So... Let me just cue this up.
Hey, how you doing, listeners? Adam Buxton here. A slightly unusual start to the podcast this week. You might be able to hear that I am not in my usual farm track, but in a park just outside Norwich with Rosie. It's a special treat. Hello. Are you okay?
Oh, yeah, fine. Just out walking the dog and, unbelievably, lost the ruddy thing.
Oh, dear.
So you've seen her, have you?
What kind of dog is it?
A beige one. Yeah, a beige bitch. Bev, no second name. Yeah.
Don't think I have seen a dog like that.
It's Adam, isn't it?
Yes, that's
Alan.
Right.
Alan.
Hello, I thought I recognised you. You're Alan Partridge, right?
Yes.
I used to watch your chat show a long time ago.
Oh, thank you.
Are you still doing stuff these days?
It always makes me laugh, Adam, when people say, you're still doing stuff. Yeah, I mean, I did lots of stuff that people notice. A high pickup with lots of traction. Which I know makes me sound like a monster truck. Congrats on your career, too.
Thank you.
Yeah. Do you know what? It goes to show, doesn't it? You just never underestimate anyone. You know, I say to people, you know, look at Adam, second name.
Buxton.
Buxton. Yeah. And apparently you make a living from this podcast.
Yep. Sponsors.
Oh, good God. Do you get good people on?
Paul McCartney. Heard of him?
Really?
Yeah, he was on.
Paul McCartney.
Wow. We had Kazuo Ishiguro and... Ramesh Ranganathan, Gary Young, the writer, Ian McEwan as well.
Paul McCartney. Wow.
Yeah,
so he's obviously up for doing podcasts.
I suppose. It took us a while to pin him down, but...
Yeah.
Anyway, I should...
Yeah, you know, I knew you lived in Norfolk, because the chap that does my garden used to do yours, but he says you wouldn't let him inside to use the toilet. He used to wee in the hedge, FYI.
Okay. And now, you emailed, didn't you? I think my producer said...
Yeah.
...wanting to advertise your podcast or something.
Oh, I wouldn't worry about
well,
that.
Well, it's just not normally the kind of thing we do is probably why we didn't get
it. It's
that.
Just Series 3 from the Oast House, the Alan Partridge podcast. I think it's 11 episodes, all available now on Audible. But, yeah, no, forget that. I mean... Although, if you ever wanted to come on my podcast and plug yours, more than welcome. We're not meant to advertise, but there are always ways around it.
Yeah, like coming out to a park and pretending you've lost your dog.
You wouldn't do that.
Do you even own a dog?
I've owned lots of dogs, mate.
Yeah, but do you have one now?
Well, define own.
Possess or have.
Define dog. I mean, where is this even going?
Well, it's just funny that you emailed and then... You're here in the park while I'm recording, talking about an invisible dog.
Ah, there she is.
Hello, girl.
Thought I'd lost you. What colour would you say that is, Adam?
Yeah, beige.
Beige, precisely. Yeah. Quick look at the groin. She's a...
Bitch.
Beige bitch, exactly as described.
Sorry, I didn't mean to...
Yeah, it's absolutely fine, Adam. Couldn't care less, Adam.
Anyway, well, nice to meet you, Alan.
Not a liar, Adam.
Yeah.
We must sort numbers sometime.
I'll
get Macca's details.
Bye, Alan.
So there we have it, a meeting of minds. Adam Buxton meets Alan Partridge there. What did you guys make of that?
I thought it was good. There's a lot to unpack. Lots of nice subtle digs and references, especially around him trying to get McCartney for his podcast, but Alan, Adam's beaten Alan to it.
Another
I think
well.
That was one of my favourite bits where he clearly doesn't have a clue who any of the other guests are. So he just goes,
yeah.
Wow, Paul McCartney.
Who do you think the beige bitch belonged to? We may never know.
Well, define belong.
Very good.
Well, I think this is something that I think comes up in some of the episodes we are going to be discussing is... I can't remember exactly which episode, but isn't there a thing coming up where Alan says about he tried having other dogs post-seldom,
yes.
But it didn't work out?
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
yeah I think
the other dog was quietly escorted from the premises.
So
this is one of his failed experiments, basically.
Yeah, which I think also allows the inconsistency of the having a dog, not having a dog in Oast House Series 2 that I think we discussed as well.
Or, he could have planned it. He could have borrowed a dog from one of his friends at the racket club and used it for purposes of bumping into Adam Buxton to try and get on his podcast, try and advertise on his podcast and get Macca's phone number.
But yeah, I thought that was very good. Like I say, I like, we've talked about this quite a bit this series, I like the effort that Steve and the Gibbons brothers go to when it comes to promoting their output these days. You have, you know, these extra properly scripted pieces of content which really enrich the APU around it. And I thought that was a very cleverly done kind of crossover, and definitely for podcast fans, I think a real kind of Easter egg where, you know, it's possible a lot of Partridge fans listen to Adam Buxton, but they might have skipped ahead and even missed that advert entirely. So yeah, I think that was very clever.
Do we think that's been placed like a regular host read ad? Like money's changed hands, that's not a...
Oh, 100%. Kind of,
doesn't work for Buxton as well as for Alan. No, fair enough. The other thing I quite like is that there's a through line there, because as you said, the guest on that episode is Tash Dimitriou. Tash Dimitriou's brother is Jamie Dimitriou. Jamie Dimitriou has been on Partridge and is in, or was in, a relationship with Steve Coogan's daughter.
That's so, number one.
There's a through line.
I mean, also don't forget Tash Dimitriou has been in Partridge.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, significantly more than Jamie.
Yeah, that's true. Almost everyone from staff Let's Fats has been in Partridge at one point or another now, haven't they?
Yeah.
On to episode 9, Newcastle, depending on where you hail from. 26 minutes 22, among the longest episodes of the series. Tom Dark, what does Audible have to say about it?
Our official episode synopsis for this is: Alan visits the Northeast, a land where time has largely stood still, in a bid to track down a long-lost Geordie acquaintance.
Quick question to the group. Has anyone else been to Newcastle, or has anyone been to Newcastle? I have been to Newcastle. I briefly dated a Geordie who lived nearby.
Wow.
Also been to Newcastle, briefly in a pop punk band, and played several nights in Newcastle. Lovely to see.
Tell us more about the pop punk band, Nick, that our listeners are going to want to know.
That could be on my spin-off podcast. my pop punk.
Katie's.
my pop punk years.
I've never been.
I think I've been once, and I think I was probably about 11 or 12, so don't really have much to say about it apart from I know that I went there. More of those great stories at the same time next week.
It's
a place we've been. Let's leave it at that. Welcome to the places of my life.
And I have nothing more to say.
So I've got a note here with no context. It's been a little while since I wrote this, and I've just put the pocket becomes the packet. Now, I presume this relates to some sort of travel snack for Alan, does it not?
It's all about his... I mean, you basically get... Okay, so what's going on here is he says the pocket becomes a packet. I won't go into detail about it. Don't have time. He then proceeds to talk at great length, basically narrating the process of putting on a rucksack, telling us about the branding on his umbrella, explaining the sound of the umbrella stand. So...
It's a cagoule, isn't it? It's basically, it hasn't got time to go into the detail, but the pocket becomes the packet.
It's the waterproof that eats itself.
Yeah, exactly. And it's one of those things that we've heard before. They do like a repeated joke, but haven't got time to go into it, but then proceeds to basically go into the detail of it. But it could have been train snacks, because Alan is on a special journey.
He is a journey that not many people take, especially London journalists, who he claims only travel north to go to a party conference in Manchester or see one of their mates do stand up at the Edinburgh Festival. and he's not alone. Wilf, the sound recordist, is with him.
Yeah, and I don't think Wilf has been referenced before, right? So I think this is Wilf's first excursion recording with Alan, and quite possibly his last.
Because I got a bit confused with Wilf, because I was like, oh, it's Wilf from before, but that was Nathan. So Nathan has kind of previously been his go-to sound person, and this is Wilf's first expedition, as it were.
But I think Nathan is more of the music guy. He's the jingles guy. He's a creative source. I think
he's the Svengali.
Yeah, I think Wilf is more. He's literally the documentary sound recordist.
Yeah, he's the sound recordist, and he's previously worked on an audio drama that sadly didn't go anywhere because it was poor, which I thought was really good.
I had another note at the top of this episode as well. I think the opening line of this is, "Hello, I'm Alan Partridge and I am leaving." And just hearing Alan simply saying the word leaving made me think of "I'm leaving you, you cow." Don't know if anybody else had that. It just kind of, these sort of connections are very, very ingrained now with certain words with the Alan character for me, I think.
So yes, he's on his way to Newcastle on the hunt for Michael. I've just got a note here. I think we talked about this a bit before, but do we think that he's genuinely emotionally invested, or does he now see this as great podcast content? Because, I mean, obviously he's excited about Michael, but he's found the time to source and hire a sound recordist. So
clearly he's got one eye on the content he's going to get out of this voyage as well.
I think it's A and it's B, but to answer the question directly about how emotionally invested he is, I think would be to reveal the climax of this episode. So we'd almost need to kind of put a pin in that and come back to it. But I also think he is invested in it as a piece of podcasting drama for financial reasons, because again, I think he's quite keen to milk Audible for a spin-off podcast.
I think, and obviously that's what this whole episode becomes. It's basically an audition for that. But in terms of the kind of emotional heft of this, you do have some brilliant voice acting from Steve in this episode, particularly at the top when I think he says, he's talking about Michael saying his last act was an act of self-sacrifice, and his voice kind of breaks like he's about to burst into tears or something. Like, really great acting from Steve.
Yeah, that was awesome. Just before that, he has 5 bullet points, I guess, to sum up Michael. I think they've partly done this just to make sure that, you know, everyone listening connects this to the Michael of old, because there might be some people at this point who are kind of like, oh, still haven't clocked that it's the Michael, the Geordie Michael. So does anyone have any other things on Alan's bullet point list, or shall I run us through? So Michael is a friend of mine, a low achiever, a troubled man with a string of motoring convictions. He has a 20-year cider dependency. And finally, a tendency to stare and smile at women even when they're not smiling back.
Yeah, that's Michael. That's the checklist.
That description did get me thinking, actually, that although we all obviously want Michael back and want to have some more Michael content, he is from a much more exaggerated era of Partridge. He's from a very slapstick, over-the-top era. And it did get me wondering, if and when he does turn up, is he almost too large a character to fit into this sort of subtle, nuanced APU? I mean, obviously, we'll come on to how they do or don't handle that, but yeah.
Yeah, thinking about it, I definitely agree, and I think that's maybe one of the reasons that the writers have written him out so far. I'm trying to be delicate with my phrasing.
Well, I think, is it not okay if we drop that spoiler now, because it ties in so much to what we're going to discuss? And I think if anybody's listening to this podcast before it's they've listened to the Oast House podcast, stop listening to this now, go and listen to the Oast House podcast and come back, because we'll just be ruining everything otherwise. So I think it's fair to declare this a spoiler zone. I think
shall
that makes
we,
sense.
Shall we give listeners a 5 seconds to pause and stop the recording?
Yeah,
and stop listening.
Yeah, and Jed, if you can drop in some kind of like spoiler alert klaxon, I think this is now like a spoiler amnesty. From here on out, I think it's spoilers a go-go. Jed, drop the klaxon.
Rude alert, rude alert. An electrical fire has knocked out my voice recognition unicycle. Many Whirlits are missing from my database. Abandoned shop. This is not a daffodil. Repeat, this is not a daffodil.
Right, now that's out of the way.
Guys,
thank God,
Michael's alive. Michael's alive.
I mean, I think the interesting thing is, well, the way we can talk about this is how you were kind of thinking about it going through your first listen compared to repeat listens, because so the reveal of Michael, which we will talk about in much more depth when we get to that episode, but, you know, on first listen, you're not sure if it's actually going to happen, because there have been a few false starts, there have been a few dead ends with this story. And I do think the way they did do it, I think, was bang on the money in terms of it's actually quite a subtle reintroduction. And I think they're leaning much more on the kind of like befuddled Michael traits more than the kind of slapstick type approach.
Yeah.
I think particularly in the conversation they have, but I think we'll get into that much more in depth next week, right?
And to Adam's point, you know, I think the subtlety in which they do it, and obviously we'll talk about it, but it feels like Michael moving forward is very much a kind of little and often, like a little bit of seasoning, a little bit of a sprinkling here and there to add a bit of colour and a bit of humour.
He's the Tabasco to Alan's omelette.
I mean, I guess it's almost in the way that they've used Lynn throughout this series as well. She's become, her presence has become more significant as the series has come on. And, you know, it begins with hearing just one side of a phone call with her to now where she is a fully vocalised and audible character within the series. So it feels like there's perhaps a similar approach of Michael here, where he's been quite a big presence or spectre within this whole series, but in terms of an audible character, it's only at the very end that you get that. So yeah, I'm really interested to see how that develops.
So to return from alive Michael to dead Michael for a second,
yep.
Alan mentions that a coroner with big jowls pronounced Michael dead after a month. I did check if that was the standard procedure, and it's not at all. 7 years in the UK you have to be missing before you're declared dead.
Yeah.
So they've been very premature with their assessment of Michael there. Yes, and didn't he have down as his next of kin social services? Or have I written that?
Yeah,
I might have written
yeah.
that.
No, yeah, wrong. No yeah, that's yeah, yeah. right. Quite bleak that point. And I think they said his Woolworths shoes are found bobbing in the water. I don't know how old
yeah.
Those shoes would have been, because Woolworths hasn't been a thing for 20 plus years. So poor Michael, he probably just needed some new shoes.
Michael's advice is that you always take your shoes off first if you fall into water, which has somehow translated into Alan spending 30 minutes on every holiday doing and undoing jelly sandal buckles in the shallow end of the swimming pool.
I really enjoyed that. Yeah, the visual kind of element to that gag of him being in the shallow end of a pool for 30 minutes and him wearing jelly sandals, which is something that you'd probably associate with a toddler, I also really liked.
By the way, I think Woolworths closed finally in January 2009.
Finally?
Wow. That's later than I expected.
Yeah, well, actually... Nick and Adam, do you remember when we lived in a house in Tooting and we went to the big Woolworths in Tooting probably in like the final week thinking, oh, this might be a fun experience. Maybe there are some bargains to be had.
Yeah, I do remember
and
that,
it was
actually.
Basically empty shelves and really depressing.
yeah,
super bleak.
End of days.
I like that the whole hunt for Michael, this whole storyline is only really plausible because Lynn has done all the legwork.
Yes.
Like Alan would not put the effort in to get to this conclusion. But of course, at the point, it now becomes an easy find. Alan wants it, and it is very much sidelined as he traipses up to Newcastle with his sound recordist in tow.
I really chuckled at the part where Alan kind of says, so what's got me hooked on this case? And one of the reasons why he might be hooked on the case was because he had a dream about Michael living underwater in the lost city of Atlantis. That might be a genuine and plausible reason as to why he was so hooked on finding Michael.
But then it's also like, or is it Lynn and Moira spending the last 3 months researching it? I mean, that's really it, isn't it?
Yeah, of course.
Just to go back to your point, Adam, the episode before the last one, of course, which is New Grandkid, the episode ends with Alan basically saying, what would you do, or what should I do to Lynn? And Lynn says, you should go to I would go to Newcastle. He's like, yeah, but apart from that, what would you do? So yeah, she's basically planted the seed in his head to go to Newcastle. And so it's only right that she should be lined up for a reward, which in true Alan style starts as an open day at Balmoral for her and Moira, and is then subtly negotiated down to one night where Moira pays her own way and Lynn has to go by National Express.
And Moira, that is quite an injustice on Moira when we kind of subsequently find out the effort that Moira's kind of been going to. That feels deeply unfair.
Well, and also the ill health that will be revealed down the line in terms of Moira as well. She's really been struggling against adversity to then have to pay her own way at Balmoral. So, yes, Alan's got one eye on spinning some podcast gold out of this missing Michael. So he decides then to split the podcast into three to demonstrate to Audible that it could be a side pod called The Finder, or I enjoyed Searching for Cider-Man, a great play. By Searching for Sugarman, the Oscar-winning documentary.
I kind of felt, why go with The Finder when Searching for Cider-Man was such a better gag?
Yeah.
I was like, just call it Searching for Cider-Man. That's so good. It wasn't quite clear the name parks. It's just, you know, he introduces it as The Finder and then welcome to Searching for Cider-Man. And then we start with chapter one, Tentacles. And there's a very kind
tentacles.
Of like familiar sort of true crime pod feel now where everything's kind of, you know, chaptered out, and they're obviously having a bit of fun with that kind of format.
The three chapters, it's Tentacles, chapter two is The Net Closes, and chapter three is Horizons. I mean, also kind of just like quite kind of grandiose chapter titles based on what actually happens across this episode.
Yeah.
And crucially, none of them relate to each other as well. Like, you can understand if it was sort of, you know, like it was Tentacles, Deep Water, or, you know, or like, you know, The Net Closes, or, yeah, like they're like they're from three completely separate stories. A great joke about his train journey from Norfolk to Newcastle, where he's complaining that
at London North Eastern Railway having a laugh with a £457 return fare. He could have flown to Nigeria for that money, etc., etc. There's a good joke about him still being on board with privatisation, even though no money's been added back into the services. And he says, like Keir Starmer, he thinks they should just be given a chance to work, which I thought was a nice dig. But the real reveal here is that actually of that extortionate fare that he's outraged about, two-thirds of it is his own upgrade to first class that he's chosen.
Yeah. So essentially, both Alan and Lynn could have travelled for like about, £314. But Alan had to travel first class, so no Lynn. And yeah, I thought the privatisation stuff was a very fun joke. And again, you kind of get it's the Alan yes, Coogan no. It's all quite knowing. But also a bit of a dig at Keir Starmer in a bit of a fair way in terms of criticism being levelled at the left and the right from the character, which I think is quite good. It's interesting as well, because I have seen a bit of discourse online in terms of, I think there is some Partridge fans, I think, have been a bit critical about how political the character is these days. Because it does feel like political viewpoints are becoming quite an intrinsic part of modern day Alan. Which I don't think really would have been the case in the 90s so much. Lieutenant Colonel Kojak Slapper III and stuff like that. And I mean, I know he appeared on things like the Friday Night Armistice and stuff, but what you wouldn't really get in the early days, I think, was like an indication of the character's political viewpoints, which I think you get more and more, which is often an inverse of what Steve Coogan would think quite possibly. But I think ultimately politics is quite fertile ground for comedy, and it's quite a good way to broaden the character scope from what he was in the 90s. And also I do think, as you know, as Steve Coogan gets older, it stands to reason that, because I think this is quite a general thing, as you get older, politics and political viewpoints tend to become more important. So I'm not surprised that's something that has built more in the character over the years.
I think he talked about this on Off Menu, where he said he doesn't use social media, and so what he's able to now do is kind of delicately put out certain points that he may believe but doesn't really have a platform for, and doesn't particularly want to kind of stick his neck out. And none of them are particularly kind of contentious, but Alan now lets him sort of delicately touch on sort of sensitive areas of, you know, contemporary discourse, and the character now allows him to kind of do that when Steve himself kind of is actually a fairly private person and doesn't really raise his head above the kind of the parapet. So I think Alan's become a bit of a vehicle for that as well.
So he has narrowed down, well, firstly, Moira is ill, so let's plant that seed, which will germinate later down the line. It also provides a convenient reason for them to not have Felicity Montague all the way through this episode, because Lynn has had to look after Moira. Yes, as he said, Lynn is providing some TLC, or LC, or more likely just C. Really like that. But he's tracked down the van that Michael's hired. It's a snappy car and van hire. And he's had to deal for the first time with a proper Geordie accent. He says, I know people think they've heard Geordie accents on Channel 4, but there's Geordie and there's Geordie.
My God, he was Geordie.
I like as well that at this point of being at a snappy car and van hire, he says, so we begin. So he's officially starting the episode, and we're over 8 minutes into the episode, which I thought was quite fun. I did also enjoy when he's talking about Lynn's bedside manner. He equates it to that of a Soviet prison hospital.
I thought this was a really fun bit where he's basically just continuing, he's trying to record the podcast but keeps getting chased by the proprietor of Snappy Car and Van Hire. He's getting more and more suspicious of him.
I like it where he said he looked down at the owner's chest in the hope there were subtitles.
I thought that was great. I really enjoyed that.
And then we're on to chapter two, The Net Closes. There's another fun not knowing nod to like some of the audio production details of podcasts like this. He says, as you can tell by the way the sound went down and then up again, we're now in a new place.
He's
doing, I like that the way they dismantle it like that.
He quite often just over explains the thing that is signified quite clearly through, you know, the sound, but he feels the need to explain it to you, despite the fact that the sound is doing the very thing that he then feels the need to explain to you.
doesn't he? He then does that as well, doesn't he? With Wolf capturing the kadum noise of a staple
yeah.
gun,
yeah. yeah.
To illustrate, they're sticking up posters looking for Michael.
yeah. The posters that use the same font as Asda.
Yes, they do. Professional looking font because Asda use it. But they are fighting a losing battle because if you remember, like Nick Clegg and Patrick Kielty, Michael has a face that's easy to forget, which I thought is so true and brilliant.
But also, yeah. they never seen a picture of Michael where he doesn't look alarmed, which I also thought was great that all of Michael's pictures are one, forgettable, and two, a constant state of looking a bit alarmed.
I'm surprised that they went for Kielty on this because Clegg, easy target. You imagine that's something that Alan would go for. Kielty, bit of a rogue one, I thought. I wonder if that's one of those kind of another one of those in jokes, like actually they're good mates in real life and it's a little bit of a little fun
digging the ribs.
I suspect
they know each other. I don't know if they'll be friends, but yeah. I think Kielty was maybe doing stand-up around the time that Coogan was back in the day.
You'd actually think they might have gone for somebody like Matt Baker to like go really like super generic safe TV presenter, but
I'd struggle to pick Matt Baker out of a lineup. I know the name, but I always forget. I would get him mixed up with Jake Humphries and who's the other one? One who does Saturday Kitchen. Is that Matt Baker? I don't know.
To be fair, I think if we're talking about people with similar and anonymous faces, I think we're very much in a glass house throwing stones at this point.
It's a fair point.
Yeah, that's a fun detail, isn't it? That after this podcast starting in 2016, after all these years, now finally all four of us are wearing glasses whilst we record.
It comes for us. It comes for you all in the end. They put the finishing touches on Michael's poster. Remember, this is a serious poster looking for a man presumed dead. But they figured the word wanted makes sense. And if you can have the word wanted, why wouldn't you put it in a Wild West font? So yeah, that's what they've done. And then, you know, they are keen to find him. So offer a reward of £350. But this is Michael we're talking about. So also add do not approach.
Yeah, so the posters, where they're, the posters must literally read, have you seen this man? Do not approach.
Yeah.
Like, so yeah.
Wanted. I don't think they're
quite achieving what they set out to there.
The two fonts that they've gone for there are Wild West and Asda as
yeah,
well.
It's a winning combo. I also enjoyed the thing about this poster that it's like an SOS or a message in a bottle. As Alan says, words brought to life by my favourite reggae artist, Sting.
Yeah. he was from around here, and Chris Rea, and Jimmy Nail. Sting from a nail in your rear. Got to try stand up, and there's this episode's got to try stand up.
And I believe that's the fifth one this series, and the first one we've had since episode four.
On phrases that Alan quite often repeats throughout the APU, I forgot to mention it earlier. There was a trainers in a washing machine line that Alan used. So, I mean, that's possibly
more to come.
And more to come, exactly. So,
yeah, definitely. Just one note about SOS as well. So, because they obviously went with the message in a bottle Sting route, but I did think they could have gone SOS and gone down an ABBA route there, but I guess they probably didn't have a gag as good as the Sting one, so that's why they went for that.
Yeah, makes sense. And so Michael's claim to have fought in multiple places, which is almost certainly a lie, but he probably did one of them. That's what Alan says. And so for that reason, Alan's off to the local British Legion Club. He's dressed to fit in, military colours, khaki/sage, cashmere sweater and Doc Martens.
I'm enjoying that he's scuffing up his boots to try and give the appearance of someone that's seen action, very much keen to kind of fit in. And I mean, he's almost gone in fancy dress, basically, hasn't he? He's gone as like some kind of fancy dress soldier.
Well, I think he's accidentally dressed in a sort of 80s gay uniform and wandered into, I imagine, the LGBTQI district of Newcastle, because he says there's lots of people locally wearing the same. You could tell by the Freddie Mercury moustaches and upright posture. There's a lot of ex-military around.
See, I did wonder whether that was the gag there, but So he says that the British Legion Club is in Jesmond, and I looked up Jesmond, and the description I got was just that it's an upscale suburb with posh clothing boutiques and cafes, nightlife,
the yummy mummy district,
cocktail bars. So there was no mention of it being a gay district, but yeah, it did. I did think that was perhaps what the gag was going to be.
So it's not the little Hebden of Newcastle.
Doesn't seem like it, but I don't know. Maybe it is, and that just
this,
isn't.
This feels like perfect territory for a listener who is from Newcastle to correct us on Jesmond's. Write in, let us know what have we got wrong, and crucially, what is the gag here?
Well, Tom and I do have a mutual friend who has contributed to the podcast in the past about a question about Newcastle. So I see Tom has grabbed his phone. Are you going to deploy
a great point.
Are you going to deploy WhatsApp? He's on the case.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
So Alan decides that he looks a bit silly because his Doc Martens are too pristine. So he tries to scuff them on the wall, but does it by kicking the British Legion and then getting caught. Wilf at this point, I've got here that Wilf panicked and sidled away.
Yeah.
But I wondered that actually, isn't it just that Alan's making a tit of himself and so he's just the sound's just been faded down to spare Alan's blushes?
Yeah, it could be. Could be that. Or he could be doing a Michael and running away like a chicken.
I enjoy as well that Alan thought that showing the Union Jack label inside his jacket seemed to quell the man who came over and started having a bit of a go at him. Sort of narrating this like it's a nature documentary about approaching lions.
Oh, he's just where basically the it turns out that they were in the same battalion. And
yeah,
he recognises Michael. I always lose confidence in my own notes, and I've worried that I've written this as a typo. But I've got, is Michael's surname Carver?
Yeah, well, yes and no.
Yes,
well, yeah.
Yes and no. Yeah. So yeah, Alan's the guy who's accosted Alan is from the 5th Battalion. Has the same tattoo. He says, "Yeah, do you recognise this man?" Which Alan tells us means yes. I, Michael Carver. So, I think it becomes apparent that Alan didn't ever know Michael's surname until now. And yes, I mean, I'm skipping ahead a little bit, but later on Alan says, you know, it's time to catch Michael in the act. It was time to get Carver. And then he says, shame on you and fuck off to the people who suggested the surname Carver was in there just to make that reference. And I thought that's the first indication that this isn't all unfolding as Alan's described it. And perhaps actually Michael's surname isn't Carver. Alan's switched the name in order to make this sort of clunky get Carter reference and then get all angry about it afterwards.
Yeah, I've just seen that in my notes. I've read down where it's like time to go and get Carver. I mean, we'll never know. And it's a joke that doesn't need to be overanalyzed, but here we go. you never know. There might be more intel on Michael the more we kind of get into future episodes. But for now, should we go with the fact that Michael's surname is Carver?
Let's do it.
Well, I guess we don't have any evidence to the contrary, do we? So
no.
Well, only that Alan sort of says shame on you and fuck off to the people who suggested that he made it up just to make that reference, which suggests to me that maybe he did.
But yeah.
Let's leave it there. There's no more to be gleaned from this. More importantly, Lynn was so excited she broke into a funky dance, flapping her arms like a chicken, which I can sort of imagine. She's quite hen-like.
A very stocky hen seems with like a strong coat.
A natural clucker. Yes, so today is actually the anniversary of Alice Carver, Michael's mother, passed away. Cause of death, fell over. So Alan suspects this means a visit to the cemetery to bedeck the grave with flowers, wreaths, cards and tat, which I really enjoyed.
Is it this point you get the discussion about All Saints Cemetery being a naked attempt to accrue maximum holiness? And he basically says it's like a Holy Avengers film. That approach, why make a Spider-Man a film where you can chuck in Iron Man, Captain America and the Big Shrek?
Yes.
Guys, sorry, I've got the Geordie bat phone. We've got
breaking
some
news
correspondence
from Oop North.
We're going to cut live to this. Sorry, Adam, to cut across here, but this is fresh in.
Yes, there is a gear area in Newcastle. It's right by Central Station. It's got a lovely club called Powerhouse, which I highly recommend. No, Jesmond is not the gear area, but it is lovely.
There we go, straight from the horse's mouth. So, that wasn't the gag. But we've all learnt a bit more about Newcastle there. So everyone's a winner.
We have. Yes, referring to the Incredible Hulk as the Big Shrek. I like that a lot. It did also make me wonder, I think it's feasible that Coogan and Ruffalo have crossed paths at some point and that this is perhaps a little dig at Mark Ruffalo. I can see that being a possibility.
Could be.
He then shoots his shot with a film pitch along the same lines as gathering all the Avengers together. Saints who are no longer with us all gather together. So he lists Sir Peter, Batman, immediately off the Saints list, Gandhi, Jesus, Mother Teresa, and Superman. So that's your heroes. He then would pit them against Pol Pot, Wolverine, and the Penguin. I feel like it's important to stress that Wolverine is not a baddie, so he's got a very thin grasp on the
I think you've missed out
Marvel.
Pinochet there as well. I think that was another name.
Yeah, I did. How could I?
All right, so when he went through that list, that kind of... It made me think of... I thought I'd seen a meme about a kind of like a fake computer game where like a kind of Street Fighter type game where you could be people like Mother Teresa and Gandhi and other like superheroes and stuff. And actually, I'd kind of misremembered it. There is a real game, a real fighting game that basically is a Street Fighter type clone called Fight of Gods, made by a Taiwanese indie computer game developer, where you can play as Jesus, Buddha, Santa Claus, Moses, Zeus, and more. So it's very similar, that idea, which I thought was quite funny. It's definitely the sort of thing I'd seen it shared in a bit of a memeable way and just assumed that it wasn't real, but that is a real computer game. So Alan's on very similar ground there, I thought. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of that at all.
Was that like on the Commodore 64?
No, it's relatively recent.
Okay.
It rings a bell, but I would love to see their fatalities.
Yeah.
I think there are YouTube compilations. So we can maybe share that.
Go with God and finish him. Alan's now reading a few headstones and pondering his own death. He says he's reading the headstone. It says, loved by all who knew him. He says, I wish I could say that. His headstone would read, here lies Alan Partridge, live and let die, or tomorrow never dies, or die another day, or no time to die, or if he's under 80, here lies Alan Partridge, Thunderball. it's time for our favourite simile. Thoughts tumbled around his head like trainers in a washing machine.
Twice in one episode.
And then we have Alan talking through a bit of a list of things that he would want to tell Michael if he's still alive. So this is kind of Alan picking the real high points of his life in the years that Michael has been a missing person / presumed dead. So those high points are that Alan is now driving a Range Rover Sport, that he built a house, that he saw a man dressed as Mickey Mouse being sick behind a hedge at Disneyland, I think. Something about a documentary about the Falklands, and the Alan rappelled down the side of Norwich Town Hall for charity, and it looked a bit like the Iranian embassy siege. So those are the high points. I think that's everything, isn't it? Those are the high points that Alan would want to tell Michael about.
it's fun because most of those we've never heard about before as well.
Yeah,
they've not been
mentioned exactly.
in book or podcast.
None of it is like, yeah, I presented a show back on BBC One or nothing like that. I also thought there was a good bit of grammatical fun here where Alan talks about the erroneously approached Geordie that says he could have warned him instead of could have warned him. I've got the wrong around. Basically, because the guy he approaches is grammatically correct, he knows that it isn't Michael. That was the point. Just it's very confusing. Could have, could have.
Yeah, and why would that person say that at all? I remember thinking, like, logically, it doesn't make sense that that's something that anyone would say to Alan in that situation.
Yeah, it doesn't really make sense, but the grammatical gag is a bit of fun. Calling a groundsman at a Newcastle cemetery a big Geordie idiot is unlikely to have been wide of the mark. I think that's how we sign off chapter two of this.
Time to move on to chapter three, Horizons. So I've got Alan comes up to Arthur's Hill to reflect. I was just rereading my notes here, and I forgot this bit gets a bit strange where he's kind of looking at various different houses and commenting on what people may or may not be doing. So he talks about
the imagined scenarios.
Imagined scenarios, watching Holby arguing over Brexit. And then there's a kind of scenario where a boy wants to be a girl in a family and like the mum is kind of supportive, the dad isn't, and he uses a word which you can't say, but you can say cunt, which he says kind of is weird. But that whole kind of like setup I found a little bit odd as a way to close the episode.
It's a little bit like those times where he sort of imagines a conversation and then he ends up arguing with himself by proxy, isn't it? One bit I really enjoyed to kind of give the full description of one of those families was he imagines an argument over Brexit between their family and their son who managed to get into university, which I thought was funny. Would he have said managed if it wasn't in Newcastle?
Yeah,
I think
possibly not.
I think he's done that deliberately. And then he then imagines someone who's seeking salvation in painstakingly teaching a duck to fly. And I mean, I wondered if this is a sort of half reference to Kez, which is probably one of Alan's very few reference points for the North, is having seen Kez as a child.
And also remember in Oastowes Series 1, he tried to, he himself tried to restore a bird and teach it to fly.
Morris.
Morris, that was it. As I was saying that sentence, I was like, I can't remember what the name was, but you're right, it was Morris.
Morris the Magpie.
Morris the Magpie, thank you.
So there's a clue as to Michael's whereabouts. He thinks... at Michael's mother's grave, there's a snow globe for a Portuguese resort. And he remembers that Michael spoke highly of a timeshare salesman there who had made, and I quote, £1.5 million, which I thought was really nice.
Question about this as well. So this implies that Alan has taken the snow globe from Michael's mother's grave as well.
It's the tat from the grave, isn't it?
In his pocket.
I forgot to mention, but earlier he also interrupted two funerals, so he's on an absolute crime spree.
And pretended to lay flowers. He also makes reference to pretending to lay flowers, which in a graveyard is fairly despicable, I would say.
And also probably quite obvious that you're not laying flowers as well. The snow globe is this is where the reveal of the Camping Tavira Algarve, right? That's what's on the snow globe. Anybody do some research into that? Because I have.
Have you spent a long weekend there?
No,
in
thank
search
God.
Of the truth.
No,
searching for Spider-Man.
What I've done was more than enough. So, Camping Tavira in the Algarve is a genuine place. I found this great one-star review on TripAdvisor titled "Horrible Experience." The review reads thus: "The experience was already very unpleasant because of the mosquitoes, but the unqualified and rude staff was able to make it worse." Oh yeah, also the grammar is all over the shop here. We paid, spelt P-A-Y-E-D, for hot water, but it was never hot. The supermarket is closed 80% of the time, and a mosquito repellent costs you €80, brackets, effective for only 30 minutes on your skin. When explaining these problems and many others to the staff, the answer was, "This is an old camping, those issues are not our fault." So, probably not going to be booking a weekend at Camping Tavira Algarve personally.
Well,
what I would actually say on that is, if you know, that review is less about the place itself and more about things that are genuinely outside of their control. I don't know how they were going
to get back control of mosquitoes.
Like mosquitoes. But that is absolutely the review which you see on Amazon all the time, which will be people will review a product and they won't review it. They'll say, driver left it on my drive, and give it one star. And you're like, well, that's not reviewing the product. That's reviewing the delivery of the product, which may be poor. But people so often don't review the thing they're supposed to be reviewing, and they review things that are outside of their control.
Right, so
I'm here to
do...
support Camping Tavera.
Right, okay, so what we're going to do, we're going to pool our resources here. We're going to send Nick an all-expenses-paid monkey tennis trip to Camping Tavera, Algarve, to give his review. I mean, Nick, I have looked at some of the
pictures.
Can
I negotiate for it to be me and Jez, or will Jez have to pay for himself?
I mean, put it this way,
Jez
Nick,
has got to pay his own way, like Moira.
Yeah, it can't be any... It can't be any worse than the surprise destination we've got planned for your stag do in a few weeks' time. So,
more to come, more to come.
I think other reviews mentioned that the campsite was basically surrounded by barbed wire and stank as well. So, Nick, have a lovely time.
And just completely, you know, nothing to do with what we've just spoken about. That's ko-fi.com/monkeytennis if you want to contribute.
Yeah, he will need €80 to afford mosquito spray on his way to the Algarve. So yes, as we said at the top of the episode, Alan says, where are you, you daft Geordie bugger? I did genuinely think at this point that a feasible end to this series of the podcast or this episode was going to be Michael is in Portugal, but Alan's decided that he can't be bothered to spend the money to go. I thought that might be what happened. But no need for that, because I think, is it Lynn that suggests to him, have you tried Googling it? It seems that up to this point, Alan had forgotten about the internet.
Yeah, or it's amazing.
Or at least, That's so good.
Or more accurately, decided that it didn't serve his podcast content to get a quick answer. Much better to have him going around graves.
I think the thing is, that, and then we get a real blow-by-blow account of him essentially completing a Google search, like literally a keystroke-by-keystroke breakdown, which is very similar to what happens at the top of the episode when he's getting ready to leave the house. And it's just like, as I think you pointed out earlier, I think this is possibly the longest episode in the series.
Yeah.
And they really have just taken the piss in terms of like these long descriptions of everything as well.
My final note for this episode was, what a cliffhanger. It's going to be really annoying if they just leave this hanging now.
Yeah.
Episode 10.
So here we are at the penultimate episode of this series. It's episode 10, Dreams, clocking in at 24 minutes 30. Tom, what does Audible say to redeem this episode?
Official synopsis is, Alan is suffering from a bout of sleepwalking involving the Titanic / Rod Stewart.
I mean, if that's the episode description for this, there is nothing here. I don't...
There is one gag that I think is very funny.
Okay.
I'll let you know. I don't think
it's not without merit. I mean, I did enjoy his attempts to get Hasselback Bad Spud Rising made.
Yeah.
Right, so I think there's a few things here in terms of, as an episode synopsis, that doesn't really work at all in terms of actually all the madness that is unleashed in this episode. But that's kind of fine, because I think some of the episode descriptions throughout this series are just quite lackluster compared to what actually happens, which I guess is potentially a bit of a deliberate joke anyway. But okay, my question to the group is, would we all agree this is the worst episode of the series?
No.
Oh, no. Okay.
No, I think the worst episode of the series is where he is locked in the sound studio. Episode 3 or 4. I thought this was actually quite funny.
Interesting.
I'm here in defense of it.
Okay, because actually I really liked episode 5, Jingle, which I think is one you're on about. I thought there were some great bits of script.
Yes, that is the episode I'm referring to.
All right, Tom and Adam, what are you saying about this? Are you with me or indifferent?
I actually have a surprising amount of notes for something that I am joking about not enjoying. I don't know if I thought it was the worst. I think there's a lot in there. I think just the conceit of it, it's already on the back foot, because like there's nothing, I mean I know it's Alan, but there's nothing more boring than someone telling you about their dreams, especially when you've just been left with a Michael cliffhanger. So I think I was biased against it from the start.
It does stink of filler, but there are some good moments in it, but I just think it is a, I mean Is it a bit of a confession at the end of the episode that they all realise that this isn't a particularly strong episode, and they actually drop a little bit of a confession in there through Alan? We'll get to
100%, 100%. And I think again that's they do this all the time now, where they literally have their cake and eat it, where they literally say at the end that this episode is not a bag of bits, which makes you think, well, therefore it definitely is a bag of bits. It's a load of half-formed ideas that wouldn't work as a whole episode in their own right. So the way they can have one idea merge into another without it making sense is that, oh, it's just like a dream. Yeah, I found this episode a bit trying, to be honest.
Well, without further ado then, should we get into it?
Yeah, let's.
So, yeah. Starts with Alan sounding strained, using a different voice. It's fairly obvious it's a setup.
Yeah.
Especially when you discover you hear Lynn's voice playing a postmistress. And yeah, he's got such a gung-ho action lines as pretending to be disabled. I'll make you disabled. And he then goes on to narrate his attacking because it's audio, so he's having to explain what he's doing while he's doing it, making the whole thing unravel.
And it turns out this is basically an excerpt from one of Alan's projects that there is a lot of buzz about, Hasselback Bad Spud Rising, which I do think it is a brilliant name, and I absolutely would watch that. Hasselback is such a good name for some a James Bond style character.
Some kind of retribution-based film, yeah.
I feel like that's the sort of pun, though, that you would expect from, like, a children's action film. That's, like, that's Chicken Run Dawn of the Nugget, isn't it? Hasselback Bad Spud Rising. That's not a film that you can take seriously as, like, a Western.
I don't know, I could see Guy Ritchie doing it.
Well, yeah, that's true. I can see Guy Ritchie doing a lot of things.
All right, so my question then is, in terms of Partridge Penned Fiction, we've got Hasselback Bad Spud Rising, we've got some of his... Do you remember he had the Hollywood film ideas in series one of The Oast House? So I think it was Gethsemane with Liam Neeson. And also he had an idea about Bruce Willis, who's like an architect who saves a woman who's either Halle Berry or Queen Latifah.
Firewall. Yeah.
Oh, there's also Firewall, yeah. and the Hannigan play, which I can never remember the proper name of.
Yeah. A glass blower. Something.
Yeah. So I'm not going to include Swallow in this because I think Swallow's been discussed a lot and is a standalone series.
Or
so
what's
those
what's,
are potentially
what's the other one for Swallow?
Or Swift? Or Swift?
No, it wasn't Swift. It's who's one that sees his wife in burnt toast and who like lit a cigar in bed?
Oh,
and...
the fire! Yeah. Oh God.
Oh dear. Oh no! This is live thinking where we haven't got
oh no,
notes
not
the
live
ready.
Thinking.
It's
Jesus Swallow. Christ!
And has anyone
is that
got...
in Nomad?
It's in
is
Nomad.
It, in Nomad?
It is Ta-da. In Nomad. Yes, Tom Stab to the rescue.
He's got
Tom,
a copy of
Tom
Nomad.
Tom Stab
here.
To the Nomad Cave. Well, basically, my question was, what do we think is the best Alan penned film project here out of those? Because for me, I actually thought the thing about Hasselback, particularly when he gets into like the
Bad
kind of...
Spud Rising.
Yeah, to give it the full title. When he's talking about the wrecking ball face-off.
Yeah, you came,
thought,
saw you conquered.
You know what? I could imagine something like that actually happening in some kind of Fast and Furious or Transformers type film. Do you know what I mean? I was like, it's actually not a bad idea.
The answer you're looking for is Flint.
Flint.
That's Flint. It. Yeah.
But Flint, think, Flint is a series like Swallow, right? So it's not a film project. That's what I'm going for, yeah.
Okay. But these are all various projects because... oh, what's the glassblower one? That's a radio play. So they're
true,
not all...
True,
yeah,
they're not one-offs. All, I'm looking at one-offs, not a series.
Yeah. But still.
Yeah. I wonder if his inability to get the radio play off the ground is why he's so scathing about Radio 4 dramas and comedy all the way through this series as well.
I thought it was a bit unjust as well. Radio 4 comes a bit of a cropper a couple of times, and I actually thought that was quite unfair. I mean, obviously, there's a bit of a joke in here because... his ideas are terrible and poorly thought through, and obviously Radio 4 drama is very kind of well regarded,
well respected, yeah.
But yeah, that seemed a little bit unfair. That I don't know if it's a kind of like again a bit of a nod and a wink because so many of his friends are going to participate in those panel shows and probably the dramas. So I think there's probably a bit of that going on.
Yeah, and of course, you know, Radio 4 is where Partridge kind of like began life, technically. So yeah, it's a Coogan yes, Alan no, isn't it?
So much like this episode being a bit of a bag of bits, I've got a few bag of bits in terms of notes here. Firstly, that his garden shed is on wheels. I wondered if that is a thing.
Does David Cameron really have his shed on wheels?
I thought, thought the joke was that it's almost a static home or a caravan. I mean, I sort of took it as a bit of a caravan, sort of.
People
are too proud to say it's a caravan, and it's like, no, it's a static home. Well, yeah, it's a caravan. That's what I took from it, but I could be wrong. Because who has a shed on wheels?
Is it not supposed to be one of those like kind of wooden carriage type things? So a bit kind of ornamental kind of type shed on wheels. Don't know.
Oh, like a shepherd's hut type situation.
Yeah, that sort of thing. That's why I kind of took it as, because obviously I don't think they're doing the static home gags. Of course, he's living in the Oast House at this point. So,
He says it's much easier to shoot a confused person like the late and controversial Osama bin Laden, which I really enjoyed that he's reduced Osama bin Laden to a controversial figure like you'd describe Tucker Carlson or Lawrence Fox. it's a Hasselbeck. It's an unproduced screenplay, but there was, as you said, there's a lot of buzz about it. It's written by an Alan Partridge, the same one as me.
Yeah. This is also probably one of the most detailed synopsis that we've had, because sometimes we've had like excerpts as played out or sections or segments of the radio dramas or whatever it might be, but this is a really, really detailed overview of the story, and then a kind of an entire scene effectively kind of narrated out in quite laboured detail, and it actually kind of takes up quite a bit of the time. But the good news is that apparently Benedict Cumberbatch and Olivia Colman will presumably at some point be keen to play their roles.
There's a subplot involving the triads, because of the presence of Duan, an evil Chinese agent who Alan can do the accent for, but can't do the accent.
Can I just interrupt at that point? Did you also clock that he switches to calling Dwayne, which I really liked?
Didn't notice that, though. But no time for that. There's a fight between two wrecking balls in Docklands, which effectively is a giant conquer fight. Yes. well, Janet, you came, you saw, you conquered. But then he cries because his son died who loved conquers.
It's good script.
It is good script, but that is basically all set up just to pay off, just for that single payoff line.
It's a nice example, though, of like them doing the kind of obvious fan service gag and then following it with something a bit more subtle that's also really funny.
Yeah. So we find out at this point that Alan is suffering from some mambitism. I think I've pronounced that right. Which is basically sleepwalking, right? That's what it is when you're kind of awake while you're asleep or asleep while you're awake. But essentially, that's what he's suffering with.
Yeah, and we know that Alan has a history of sleepwalking. This is featured in This Time.
And The Night Sweats.
Yes. And, I mean, I think probably when we've discussed this in the past, we've talked about Nick's great sleepwalking escapade of nearly weeing in his bedroom. So always keen to remind the listeners of that.
I was just drunk, though. That wasn't some mambitism. I think I was just drunk.
I remember you describing it on the podcast as booze rambling.
Oh, that was it. Yeah, booze rambling.
Yeah. Great.
And the corner of my bedroom really did pay the price.
So yes, this has somewhat become a mental health episode. It says because mental health is hot right now. It then goes on to describe various mental health conditions and what they used to call them in the olden days. Does anybody have this list? Deeply offensive list.
Yeah. God stab, you did it.
OCD, that's fussy or house proud. ADHD, fidgety or ants in your pants. Bipolar, moody, panic attacks, flapping.
Panic attacks, flapping. Yeah. I did wonder with this when we were talking about, you know, Coogan sort of subtly, testing his viewpoints here. I don't think that Coogan thinks like that in terms of, you know, describing mental health in those terms. But there was this bit about in the olden days where you kind of expected to kind of pull yourself together, not make a kind of song and dance about it. And I wonder if there was something of Coogan in that. We'll never know. We'll never know.
Yeah, I would say probably it's less down the definitely Coogan train than his stuff about cyclists in Lycra. But
yes.
Yeah, I can imagine that being true. And as he summarises the section as, back then you didn't expect a blue badge for it, but we are where we are.
Yeah, exactly. This bit, where it goes to now, I was a bit like, wow.
What?
You mean what? You mean the completely rational bit about a plague of locusts eating his dog in midair?
Yeah. Whilst I will go to defend this episode, this small section with the locust, I was sort of typing down what was going on, thinking, what? It kind of really comes out of nowhere, and yeah, doesn't make much sense, and goes on for quite a mile. Where basically, yeah, Alan goes to the window, looks out, starts to see a plague of locusts. There's quite a bit of good sound, work going on here, presumably thanks to Nathan. And yeah, a dog is eaten in midair, although he does call them dirty gets, which I quite enjoyed.
Yeah, that was quite funny. Yeah.
My notes say it does feel very much like they started with a really good locust sound effect and then just reverse engineered this whole thing to justify it being in.
Yeah, quite possibly.
Or I thought, is it perhaps... it is Nathan at this point, isn't it? We're not back with the sound recordist, Wilf. Yeah, I mean, is it just Nathan pitching for film work, like trying to prove that he can do it? And then you've got this another weird bit where Alan is describing what's happening because it's an audio format. So I've got a choice between being eaten by a locust or falling to my death. Literally explaining the scene and also contradicting the point he makes earlier about why do Radio 4 just stick to posh people sighing in rooms? Well, this is why, because it's shit when you do this, basically.
I think it's tight. It's weird as well. I'm just thinking back now that, you know, that I'd kind of forgotten this, but, you know, there's a whole episode in series one from the Ghost House about his dreams as well. So, again, just really, really ramming the point home that just, like, that episode also wasn't particularly great. And I think, yeah, the locust bits, I think that's when I really kind of clocked out of the episode, personally.
Well, if you clocked out of that bit, did you clock back in where we talk about Alan basically having a tough week? Anyone got the details on Alan's tough week? Spoiler, it doesn't sound that tough.
The only notes I've got are that in terms of locusts, it's only the tax man and the VAT man and his charitable direct debits of the locusts that are feeding on him. And that 3 months ago, he was a man with only 25% of usable tether left. And then you have to forgive me because it's been a little while since I heard this episode. I've just got as a note, people, 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 people.
I have that as well. And I can't remember because I made my notes quite a while ago.
We're nothing if not professional here. Well, I've got that Alan was basically having a bit of a tough week because he had to interview the head of Armadillo Security and was having to endlessly rehearse with him because basically the guy had gone on to Dragon's Den and kept letting off due to nerves.
Yeah. Enjoyed that because Armadillo Security and Armadillo Blinds a brand that we've got previous experience of in the APU as well.
Great little dig at Audible. Has anyone got the Audible dig here?
Really loved it, yeah. So they ask for a 10-second, 15-second, 30-second, 45-second, 60-second trailer, photo for Instagram analysis. Seriously, guys, fuck off. The people who buy the podcast are going to buy it regardless. You might as well charge them for the fucking trailers because they'll fucking pay for it.
Very good.
That could be a direct quote from the Gibbons, couldn't it? Surely.
Yeah, 100%. Definitely.
And also, that does chime with kind of what we've said about these extra things that they've done to promote the podcast, like saying that, like, they're of good enough quality that they kind of add to the actual product itself. So yeah, I think they are bang on the money there in terms of it's a bit like, you know, that back in the days when you used to get the original Partridge DVDs and like VHS have like bonus 10-minute footage type thing, isn't it? It's all good content essentially, apart from this episode.
So because of this tough week, Alan has cancelled all his engagements to, I would say, have an absolute Nick Alder of an evening. Which is,
I was going to say this,
watching dogs behaving badly with OXO Chippy, which is something he's invented, a big bowl of chips bathed in OXO, which he invented. Question to the group, would you try? It sounds too wet for me, I think.
What, chips in gravy? Absolutely, yes. But I mean, poutine is one of the best things ever.
It's not proper gravy, though, is it? It's a stock cube.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was. Yeah, he's crumbling a stock cube.
It's OXO, yeah.
It's OXO. Yeah. Oh, so it's not diluted in any ways.
No.
Okay, so he's gone the Cilla Black route.
Yes.
No. I think it is diluted, but crucially, it's not gravy. It's just beef stock. It's like chip soup.
Yes. But I did, yeah, as a child, a I used to I'd drink OXO. So I think this would work for me because I like McCain's oven chips. And as a child, I would drink OXO cubes. I haven't had OXO Chippy, but I do love dogs behaving very badly on Channel 5. Happy to have that as a dream evening.
Follow-up question, I have to know where you stand on Bovril as a drink, Nick.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, any kind of beef-based product, liquid, liquid, solid, or somewhere in between.
A pint of the black stuff, Bovril or Guinness. Split the B.
Yes, very
good. You
can't
drink a pint of Bovril. So Alan's quiet night in those rudely interrupted because Lynn's invited 50 people for a surprise party, friends and well-wishers, although mainly well-wishers. Yep. And Alan does not want the well-wishers. Tony Robinson was there. I thought this is good because I expect Coogan and Tony Robinson have crossed paths. They're both ardent Labour supporters that were very active in their supporting back in the day. You know, sort of comedy events and things. I'm sure they bumped into each other. So I like this. So Tony Robinson's there, and recognise Alan's quote that he gives to try and get rid of the well wishers. There's a Coogan yes, Alan yes here, isn't there? Where he's like, don't you start Time Team, you pass on the chance to find Richard III. Well, Coogan funded that entire film about finding Richard III, didn't he, under a car park, and this whole bit here about, oh shit, Tony Robinson's finds are compared to finding Richard III in a car park. I thought that was
80s
great.
Lego.
Talk from the year 10. It's a crock or something, but it ain't gold, pal.
Time to move on to what I would call bad advert.
Yeah, it's not a good one, is it?
Badvert.
No.
Oh, is this the manual milking volunteers?
Yep.
Yeah, it started off good. It had promise. It did have. It could have been good, but and they're so good at writing these ads that I was kind of surprised that it wasn't better. But it just wasn't that good.
Yeah, I think this setup's good. Where what's the line? Something like, due to an electrical fault.
Ever wanted to milk a cow? Well, thanks to an electrical failure, they're looking for manual milkers for its 300 herd of healthy cows. you can take 10% of your yield for you to drink, freeze, or churn. Just bring your own containers, clean gloves, and you will be provided with a stool.
And they've also run out of churns, so bring your own churns.
Yes, yeah.
Question to the group, has anyone milked a cow?
I think I must have done on a school trip at some point.
I think I must have. I can't remember, but I
have not. You don't get raised.
Phrase, must have. What why must you have?
Well, because you don't get raised in Devon without grabbing a teat or two on your way up.
Oh. Well, you said it, Adam. You said it.
Well, I think maybe we should have a poll to our audience.
Have you ever milked a cow? Yes.
Yeah, let's put it to our followers on Twitter and or Instagram.
Right,
and,
Nick, you're ahead of polls. When this episode goes live, that's the poll. Have you ever milked a cow? Maybe yes, no, or I must have.
Yeah. Another question to the group. Do you reckon Jed's milked a cow?
Oh God!
Define a cow.
Define milked.
Define Jed.
Yeah, that's lunch.
on the way out of this underwhelming advert, for Alan saying that Jersey is just full of good people, and Alan, yes, Coogan, no, because of course Jersey, one of the main aisles of tax avoidance. And then he's going on to talk about his two animated characters that he's developed to encourage Northern children to read, Bookie Arkwright and Liam Chapter.
I quite like Bookie Arkwright. I thought Liam Chapter was less good.
What did you think about their deeply sexual interaction in this children's book?
Yeah, I mean, it's not good, although Alan does admit it needs work. Unlike Hasselback Bad Spud Rising, which is ready to go. He's keen to stress.
There's a lot of buzz.
Yes. Yeah. Interested to see what everybody's views on Alan's solution to the asylum crisis is.
All I will say is, just if the potholes are getting sorted, that's going to get the vote.
So yes,
you're backing it.
He's proposing a home office policy on small boats where successful asylum seekers work in the army for 2 years, filling every pothole in Britain. Smoother roads, kinder attitudes to asylum seekers. He sent it to Grant to pass on to Suella.
I also enjoyed the fact that obviously even that gag is out of date in terms of the government ministers involved.
Who's quick? Yeah. You really got to know better than to try and reference anyone staying in post for more than about 3 months. A second Radio 4 kicking?
Yeah, exactly. Although I think it's quite funny because it is actually quite plausible. The show's kind of called Nobody's Business. I did like that it be hosted by Sue Perkins, etc., which basically suggests that they pick from a pool of about 10 people that do Radio 4 panel shows.
Yeah,
which,
it's Perkins, there is some truth in that. Tosvig, it's Osman, isn't it? Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be funny. It just has to make tired people and retired people chuckle once or twice.
I mean, and that's why Nick likes Radio 4.
That is true. Most people I know that listen to Radio 4 do it when they're tired or are retired. Like, yeah, it's funny because it's true.
Have we got a list of his other ideas? I was going to say great ideas, but to be fair, even he doesn't credit them as great ideas.
Are there three?
Yes.
Yeah, I've got three.
Yes.
Powdered orange juice is the first one.
So bad.
Edible cutlery.
Better.
Yeah. And a cock-shaped pepper box.
That must exist. I mean, that must exist.
Of course,
I mean,
it does.
To Google. I don't want to spend too long on this, but is the joke there that if it was a salt pot, that would make more sense because what comes out is the right colour, whereas a pepper pot suggests you need to see a doctor?
I can confirm they do definitely exist, having gone to Google.
Yeah. Good, now clear your search history.
I mean, we're effectively into program ideas with Tony Hares again here at this point, aren't we? As with that, a lot of these have a glimmer of workable concept, but ultimately they're no good. And then don't we then get this bit about Alan sort of withdrawing from the world a bit, and he only leaves notes in bin bags of dry cleaning that he would leave at the end of the drive?
Communicating to Lynn with just notes on dry cleaning, but again, it's like it starts and it ends and it comes from nowhere and doesn't go anywhere. And is it that funny? I mean, it's fine.
We do get trainers in a washing machine again.
Yes, indeed. But actually, scratch trainers in a washing machine, his thoughts now are more like football boots in a tumble dryer, which is great because they're really not that different, are they?
No.
Did we all enjoy why he won't go on a narrow boat with Jerry Halliwell? Yeah. I mean, it's obvious. She's too slight to open the sluice of a canal lock.
Although I would, that's a kind of a bank holiday weekend. Who's with you? What are you doing?
Yeah.
Narrow boating with Jerry Halliwell.
It's time for the Rod Stewart section of this episode, isn't it?
Do we have to?
I thought it was quite funny.
Really?
I thought it was overlong, but the central conceit that he's adamant that it's women and children first until he has an opportunity to get Rod Stewart ahead of the queue.
And you can see the joke coming, can't you?
Yeah, it's great.
Unlike the iceberg that befell the Titanic, this literally was looming large.
I mean, I think my favourite bit of this was the fact he ends up just calling Rod Stewart Stewart. That really tickled me.
It's the same joke as well, isn't it? I like that Rod is basically tipped into the water and Alan goes after him.
See, what I did find, what was interesting listening to this first time round, because you then get like the splashes in the water. And I was like, oh, hang on a minute. So is this just another audio production thing like The Locust? But then obviously you get the reveal that Alan has sleptwalked into his neighbour's swimming pool. So that was quite a kind of good little narrative device there. But take it or leave it. I can probably leave it.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And then, like we said before, there's a disclaimer at the end that the chaos of this episode was intentional. It's not a bag of bits. It's designed to be like dreams. There's a bit of live Googling about whether Waitrose sell haggis. He says no, but I once bought a haggis from Waitrose.
I was going to ask, did anyone else actually Google it? And, well, we'll go onto the Waitrose website. I can confirm that they do sell haggis. Three or four different kinds.
But, Tom, did you Google bamboo?
If I want to learn more about bamboo, I'll just Google bamboo.
Yeah. And how many times has that been mentioned in this series now? Is that...
I think it's once before.
I feel like it might even be the third. I don't know. I feel like we've had it more than twice, but maybe not. But
It is still funny, though.
I wonder if that has the potential to be a new trainers in the washing machine about Googling bamboo. It's just so random.
That panda's favourite tea.
And so that brings us to the end of the penultimate episode. So all that's left to do is invite you to chime in with your thoughts, comments and questions. Did you enjoy the episode about dreams? And if so, why? Instagram at Monkey Tennis Pod, Twitter at The Partridge Pod, Facebook.com/The Partridge Pod, ThePartridgePod@gmail.com. Chuck us a couple of coins if you're enjoying what you're listening to. We do produce this for free. You can help support us at ko-fi.com/monkeytennis. And we will inevitably be back next week with the thrilling climax of Series 3 of From the Oast House.
I just thought as well, perhaps as a bit of an enticement for future episodes. Obviously, we have the dream version of Rod Stewart appearing here. Rod Stewart was a main feature of Alan's recent comic relief appearance, which at the time of recording was only a couple of weeks ago. So we will be covering that in future episodes, but quite possibly not until series 16. Is that right? But hopefully there won't be a year between now and then, because we do have Big Beacon to get covered.
Dig. So much Partridge, so little time. So yes, until next week, when we'll be summing up our thoughts on the whole series, and let's hope, finally finding Michael, from all of us at Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast, thanks and goodbye.
I am hopping mad, and I want something in the middle!
Aha!
Yep, absolutely.
Monkey Tennis?
Bring, bring! There's a new chat in town.
I had the last laugh.
Dan!
Monkey Tennis?
Little pierce my foot on the spine.
With a chuckle.
Oh.
Monkey Tennis?
Radical. Awesome. Mega.
Monkey Tennis?
Okay.
Where's my assistant? I do not know.
Monkey Tennis?
Edmunds is a total wazzock of a guy.
Yes.
It's hotter than the sun.
I said, who the hell is that?
This is great banter.
Yeah.
Monkey Tennis?
Back of the net.
The people who enjoy Alan Partridge will enjoy this podcast. The people who've never got it still won't get it.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.